to move into our next presentation from Anchote. Anchote leads the climate change and sustainability line of business within the Environment and Social Sustainability Division at ICF International. She's a climate change expert with more than 17 years of experience analyzing climate change and energy issues for a wide range of clients, including municipalities and local, state, and federal agencies. She's worked on a variety of projects related to climate change impacts on transportation systems, including a new Federal Transit Administration pilot for the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Authority, which she'll be speaking about in her presentation today, which is utilizing historical weather data and service disruption information to inform projections of climate impacts and possible adaptation strategies. Ms. Choate has also contributed to the development of climate risk screening tools for developing countries on behalf of USAID and for the National Park Service. She has also supported EPA's Climate Ready Estuaries program. So with that, I will turn it over to Anne. And remind folks to type in your questions for the presenters as we go along. Thank you.
Okay, and sorry, I seem to have my Citrix is doing something different, but I will, in a second, you'll be able to see. Okay, there we go. So thank you again for including me in this webinar, Emma, and also thank you, Chris, for your excellent presentation. I know that moving into this webinar and thinking about how we might talk about uncertainties for state and local governments, and particularly how you overcome uncertainties when state and local decision makers and actors are trying to maximize the use of very limited resources, and also to provide services when they have aging infrastructure and again, sort of this finite set of resources available to maintain and deliver those services to growing populations under a range of various risks. And so one of the things we're going to focus on here is this threshold approach to climate change vulnerability assessment. And what I'll do is I want to start out by saying that the sky is not falling. You know, we are not all doomed, and we've certainly got all of us have probably gone into meetings where folks are sort of inherently almost unwilling to talk about this issue because it feels scary. It feels like another thing I have to do, and how am I going to find the resources to take on yet another sort of an unfunded task? And so one of the things we're trying to do here is identify some ways that folks can get over that feeling of that overwhelming feeling and basically acknowledge that the risks are real, they can't be ignored, and that with careful and strategic planning combined with a medium and long-term sort of monitoring or recalibration strategy, we'll be able to get to more prepared and ultimately more resilient communities. So the way we started out, actually, and this gets back to some of the comments that Chris made, many of the impact assessments that you read in the literature or that you've probably heard about began, particularly in the early days of sort of climate adaptation, which were about, you know, 10, 8, 6 years ago, many of them began almost exclusively with this mindset or this climate lens. And so the idea was, we'll begin with the model-generated projections of future climate conditions. So if we understand what projected climate impacts might look like, then we can make better decisions. And I think that the issue that happened there is that we had projections coming out of the climate models, but these projections of future climate stress were not decision-ready. So they weren't able to be utilized at the local scale. And there were a couple of reasons for that. First, they're often available at these coarse geographic scales, and so they require technical knowledge to interpret and you know, quite a lot of resources to do downscaling or to do sort of statistical regression analysis and other types of calculations to try to take the model outputs and make them relevant to a local scale. And even once that's happened, you're not necessarily guaranteed to have reduced the uncertainty. Next, provided on the time horizons, the time horizons that are available in many of the climate model outputs are not necessarily the time horizons that matter for the folks who need to make changes in the way that they do things. So in the way that they make their decisions and the way that they invest their resources. And so because the time horizons don't match the time frames for planning, that you're left with this disconnect. Then Often the climate models are described by variables that are unrelated to the decision-making process. And then finally, they rarely address issues associated with current climate variability. So if you already have variabilities or vulnerabilities to current climate or current weather, those vulnerabilities are not necessarily well known, and therefore understanding of the future climate is somewhat limited in terms of what that means in terms of the vulnerability of your system or the vulnerability of your assets. So what we've been trying to do instead is basically to turn that around and really to start with the system sensitivity. So start by thinking about, I'm so sorry that this keeps doing this. Of course, today it's decided. The system sensitivity, if you start with the sensitivity of your system to particular weather or climate-related stressors, then you not only understand where you have tipping points or thresholds that are of interest or that are potentially a problem for you, but you also have created a system where your decision makers and your stakeholders are bought in to the sensitivity, to the fact that these things matter, to the fact that floods over a certain level are going to cause problems and that those problems have financial impacts. Next, you have an ability to scale the level of effort to the climate variables or the weather-related events that have been proven to cause you the most pain and the most anxiety. Then you layer in present and the future climate stress, and you have the ability to use the present or the current and observed information to inform your analysis of the future climate stressors. So then that's when we've been able to look into threshold and frequency analyses, where we're able to use some observed information by pairing information on disruptions or sensitivities or vulnerabilities that we've seen over the past, you know, historically, with information about climate into the future, and to think about what costs might be of increasing frequencies of extreme weather events. And what the last bullet on this slide is basically to state that we cannot overstate the value of advancing the discourse, advancing sort of the discourse within organizations when you start with the system sensitivities and the weather and climate related events that have caused problems within these organizations in the past, and how those translate when you think about climate and weather of the future. So the example that I have here is a regional transit example where we have decision makers in a transit agency that that has an aging infrastructure, very limited resources, and yet they have to provide service to all of these customers on a very reliable basis. And so thinking about doing something, quote unquote, doing something on climate, based on climate projections with, you know, high uncertainties, it's a daunting proposition. So the focus here was, how do we zoom in on a single rail line that we know is vulnerable, and this is done on behalf of the Federal Transit Administration, who had given out grants for transit agencies to think about climate-related vulnerabilities and their adaptation strategies. And the focus here was, let's look at an inland rail line with aging infrastructure, focus on a single rail line, and try to get as fine-grained information as possible. But then something else that we were doing differently here is starting with the historical disruption data, because SEPTA has great data, and then try to use that to understand weather and climate-related sensitivities. So on this slide, this is an overview of some of the kinds of weather impacts that transit agencies have seen. These are not specific to SEPTA, but these are the kinds of things that we were looking for, particularly with respect to extreme heat impacts, such as vehicle breakdowns, catenary sagging, so the power systems, the rails buckling, reductions in construction speeds, acceleration of pavement degradation. And then when you think about heavy rain events or flooding, we've seen things such as flooding of bus or rail right-of-ways, the flooding of underground tunnels and track, the flooding of underground equipment rooms, and flooding of track beds. There also are snow and wind impacts, as you might imagine. So what we did was we said, okay, we could spend a lot of time and effort focusing in on identifying what we thought was the most vulnerable line or the most critical line, and then do an analysis there. But one way that we were able to apply the sort of thresholds concept was we were able to look at the systems that they used to catalog the delays or disruptions in the system and basically look for keywords in those descriptions that operators or that the folks in the operations center use to characterize delays. And so we did that, and as you can see, we could the Manioc-Norristown is the study line. And so for the Manioc-Norristown line, which are the yellow bars, there were a couple of places that were of particular interest to us as part of this study because we're thinking about climate impacts to an inland system. We wanted to look at rain. We wanted to look at flood and high water. And as you can see, Manioc-Norristown line seems to have a significantly higher proportion of delays associated with those kinds of weather events than the rest of the system. So that's the rest of the system is denoted in blue. So from there, we looked at the Manioc-Norristown line pretty much exclusively. And what we did was we tried to pair up information on historical observed weather with information on delay minutes and annulments. And so we started out trying to look at whether there was a relationship between specifically to find a relationship between weather and delays, a direct correlation. And we didn't really find one, so then we started looking at extremes. So we basically looked at the extreme. We calculated basically what the extreme heat, for example, might be, and then calculated the sort of the 1% and the 5%. And then we, for each of those, what we did was we looked at how the percentage of days, what the percentage of days above the threshold with delays would look like as compared to this baseline frequency of weather-related delays or annulments, which is that red line that you see running across. And so you could see that we had significantly more delay minutes in any of these instances where they crossed the threshold. So once we had identified that there was a significant difference in, for example, in the impacts over 1.4 inches of rain or 2.5 inches of rain, then we were able to start thinking about how that might relate to projected changes in precipitation temperature. So then we took the information that we developed on the historical climate and weather and the delays that had been those kinds of weather, and we compared that to information that we had on projections of climate. And so what we were able to say is that we could see, for example, that the 5 percentile event was going to occur 2.6 more times more frequently by mid-century under one of the climate scenarios we were evaluating. And so we looked at several different examples or different climate scenarios, and I won't get into that here, but we do have a full report that we can share with anyone once it's complete, where all of this is well documented. But the bottom line is that what we tried to do is base all of our discussions with the operations people in SEPTA and the stakeholders that are reliant on those services. We grounded all of that information that they were well aware of in terms of they knew where their vulnerabilities lay, but they had never tried to correlate the significant delays, for example, the large disruptions or the longer delays with specific thresholds of temperature or precipitation. And so once that was done, it was easy for us to talk to them about what might it look like if you have that kind of day 5 times more, 2 times more, 3 times more, and what might that cost. And so in no way are we trying to say that we know what the future looks like, but we certainly can work with them to think about what the future might look like, how much that might cost, and how some incremental changes, or in some cases some longer-term changes in their system or the way that they operate their system, might ultimately reduce their vulnerability and make their system more resilient. So so on this slide, I have a list of some of the advantages of using this kind of threshold approach. First, that thresholds enabled this focused analysis of climate data. So we didn't need to look at all of the climate information that was available to us. We knew what climate data was available for the region, and we could focus in on where these assets and this service in particular was sensitive. That saved time and resources. Then we had impacts that had been characterized and they offered these near-term opportunities for adaptation. So we've actually been working to identify near-term adaptation strategies, mid and medium-term adaptation strategies. So they'll be able to see whether some of these measures actually over time contribute to resilience of the system. And then the impact narrative, so sort of thinking about what it might look like in the future if you had more 98-degree days, for example, than you've seen in the past, has been very helpful in engaging internal stakeholders and in clarifying where their sensitivities lie and what strategies are within their control to reduce their vulnerability. Now, there are some significant limitations. For one, this approach ignores novel impacts. So obviously, if you were in a coastal situation, looking at historical is not necessarily going to help you with anything like a sea level rise or a storm surge associated with strong winds and a tropical storm and, you know, layered on top of sea level rise. So obviously, we've ignored those novel impacts here, and we had sort of the luxury of ignoring them in this context. It would not be well-suited for transformative action. So if there was some paradigm shift in the climate, you know, we probably wouldn't have caught that here. And then it is inwardly focused. So it's not integrated across sectors. Because this was so focused on the sensitivities of this system, it doesn't do a great job of thinking about the interconnectedness, for example, of this system with the power system, which is obviously very important. So there are opportunities there where we can, once these recommendations have been developed, I think we have opportunities to think about what other stakeholders should be brought into the discussion and how sensitivities of ancillary services may relate to the sensitivities that we've identified for these services. So with that, I should just acknowledge my partners in crime. So Brad Hurley, Phil Groth, and Cassie Snow, who have been involved in sort of applying this approach in the SEPTA instance, but also in a couple of other instances with transit agencies and other clients. And then Joe Cazola, who's formerly with ICF, who's now at C2ES, but who is he was definitely very instrumental in sort of helping to think through how we could go about applying these thresholds from a climate perspective. And then Eric Johansson at SEPTA Sustainability Group. And I apologize for the technical difficulties. I don't know why my computer decided to update itself right as I was starting the webinar. So thank you, and I look forward to hearing your questions.
All right, thank you, Anne. If anyone has any questions for Anne or any of our other speakers, please type them into your GoToMeeting panel. And that's a great example of how to create an impact narrative that really resonates with decision makers and implementers at the local level using both historical and projected data. So at the moment, we're going to turn over to another poll question to ask folks, what information does your organization use to inform decision making? So if you could just take a moment to answer that question for us, we'd appreciate it.
And I think folks didn't have quite enough time to respond last time, so if we give them just a few more seconds this time.
Sure. Okay, hopefully that's enough time for folks to get their answers in. So if we could pull up our results. All right, so it looks like some of the approaches that are being used with information to use climate projections of future patterns, the 44%, averages and extremes of all available data, 33%, recent changes in climate patterns considered to be the new normal, 31%, climate information has not been explicitly considered for about 23% of the responses, and averages and extremes for just the past decade came in last at 17%. So thank you for your responses to those questions.